Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc. Being able to hold one's head high and call oneself a writer is the goal of many a passionate storyteller. But how do you get published? And what happens after that? Critical or sales success, or being published again, is far from a foregone conclusion. Courtney Maum is the author of the novels Costa Alegre Touch, and I'm having so much fun here without you. She brings her personal experience and input and insight from many other accomplished writers to her new book, Before and After the Book Deal, an all-inclusive guide for writers on how to navigate and, importantly, survive the publishing world. With chapters like Getting It Right and Getting It Out There, and down-to-earth subheadings like Can I Stay in My Corporate Job Without Losing My Creative Edge? And My Book Sales Are Sluggish, Should I Crawl Under a Rock and Die? Maum peels back the gauzy romantic curtain of a working author's life and replaces it with clarity and detailed advice. Before and After the Book Deal, A Writer's Guide to Finishing, Publishing, Promoting, and Surviving Your First Book was published by Catapult earlier this month, and Courtney Maum will be at Oblong Books and Music in Rhinebeck, New York on Thursday, January 23rd at 6 p.m. She joins us now. Good morning, Courtney. Welcome back to the Roundtable.
Thank you so much for having me, Sarah. I'm thrilled to be here.
How did you decide to put the time in to create this book for everybody? How did you realize there was a hole it needed to fill and go about creating this very inclusive, very, very thorough guide for writers?
To be honest, it started off perhaps as a selfish endeavor, maybe catharsis for myself, because a hard truth I learned, now I have 4 books out, but I think it was around having the second book out, I realized, oh my gosh, every book is a little, it's different. This ride is different with every book, and you start over again, especially if you're working with a different publisher. It gets easier in a certain sense, but it also gets harder in this existential sense. Emotionally, I think it actually gets harder, and I'm sorry to say that out loud on the radio. And then it was sort of, while I was sort of privately ruminating about these things, I started paying a little bit more attention and realized that all of my writing friends and also publishing professional friends were feeling off balance and unsure and frustrated as well for varying reasons, but it all kind of came down to the same thing, which was lack of disclosure, secrecy, opaqueness. And I wrote an essay on this subject for BuzzFeed quite a few years ago, and it got a lot of attention, and it led me to think, gosh, maybe people do want to hear about this. So I started writing it, and then I couldn't stop.
How did you decide how to break down the process? Because there are, I mean, I would think a non-writer or someone aspiring to writing who hasn't looked into it that much would think, I finish this, it gets published, it goes out, it sells or it doesn't. But there is kind of a lot more to it than that. How did you decide what chapter headings and subdivisions to include to shine light on all those other little parts?
From the get-go, I decided that I wanted it to be candid but funny. Mm-hmm. You know, because we actually get into some difficult subjects in the book, such as depression or substance abuse, feeling isolated, and I wanted to counter those things with a kind of a funny voice. And so in order to do that, I knew that I would tackle really pragmatic things like financial planning. Alongside one of my favorite subheadings that you cited about, you know, my sales are sluggish, should I crawl under a rock and die? Mm-hmm. Or what to wear when you're doing book events, whether or not you should be giving gifts to people who blurb your books. All of these sort of concerns that might seem, I'm putting this in air quotes, superficial, but they're not. When you're in the throat, when you don't know what to expect, and trust me, you don't know what to expect, everything sort of has the same weight. So what I did was I just sat down and I wrote out the table of contents, remembering, going back in time and remembering my own experience from trying to get bylines, trying to get an agent, getting the wrong agent again, finding the right, you know, I went through my own life and I created the table of contents out of that, all the way up through writing a second book. You know, I went sort of years through the process. And then what I did was I sort of double checked that with friends, both again from the publishing industry, agents, editors, and actual writers. And then I started double checking it with people I didn't know. I asked to be put in touch with people and would just kind of talk to them about what do you remember being the most challenged by, happy about, frightened by. And then I would go in and try to fill in the gaps where I felt I was missing something. And then once I had the table of contents, that's when I started putting in placeholders for such and such a an author would be an amazing contributor to this specific section. Or I remember specifically when I had the section about whether or not you should take a two-book deal if it's offered to you. Mm-hmm. I remember writing, okay, open with an anecdote about someone who had a very successful experience navigating a two-book deal, close with an anecdote from someone who had a tough time of it or is still having a tough time of it. And so kind of went through the whole table of contents like that, putting in my dream contributors. And then I went after them, you know, then I tried to get interviews with them. And happily, people were really, really eager to talk about all of this. And a lot of people on the record, too, which was a gift and a real generous offering from them.
You mentioned one of the chapters is about the agent and agent query process, which is sort of wild how much I don't know about that, how much people don't, I think, don't know about that. Could you tell us a little bit about that chapter, what's included in there?
Sure. I mean, I think, I think that for people who are looking to be published, the agent piece is the biggest question mark. It's changing a little bit. I mean, we used to live in an innocent world where you had the best manuscript you could possibly have. You revised the heck out of it. And you sent it off by mail
right.
to an agency, normally in New York, and the whole thing was rather innocent, and you waited, and 3 months or 6 months later, you got a little form rejection slip in the mail, and you just kept trying. And it was sort of content-based, because back in the day, agents couldn't, you look up your various social media handles, see what your following was, see what you had for breakfast, see all the things. Now they can, and now, for better or for worse, we're dealing with a market in which authors have either become brands or they have the potential to become brands. And so agents are not just looking at the content of what you're sending them, right?
Right.
They're looking to see, can I market this person as a brand? Can I get powerful off-the-book pieces from them that will hopefully become viral? Maybe one of them will get them a second book deal, speaking engagements. You know, and off we go. Of course, there still exists this innocent relationship where someone unknown, no bylines, sends a query letter, and then one is asked, you know, can I read the rest of the book? And the book itself is so incredible that the agent takes a risk on them. That still exists. It does. But writers today kind of have to be aware that there's this other realm in which they're expected to be their own PR agencies and their own social media managers, and navigating that public and private space, I think, is very, very complicated and very charged. And agents today, you know, they're aware of that. Also, editors are acquiring editors at publishing houses, especially at big publishing houses. They have less time than they used to edit. So a lot of agents, this is true for my agent, are now working with their clients as editors. They'll help them get the manuscript into the best shape it can be, so that when they send it to an editor, the editor has, it's difficult for them to say no, because there's not even that much editing that needs to be done. So, you know, God bless the agents. They're doing a lot of work these days. But what that means is that the writers have to be sending better content than ever, because the bars have just been kind of raised in every sector of the industry.
I'm speaking with Courtney Maum about her book Before and After the Book Deal. It's published by Catapult, and she'll be at Oblong Books and Music in Rhinebeck, New York on Thursday. You have worked as and do work as a brand namer, so have a particular, like a unique to you in the world of writing, or I mean, maybe other people too, but not most people, insight into the marketing aspect of it. Do you think that that has helped you?
I think it's helped me manage my expectations. And also, I've never had a problem with, you know, once I send in a manuscript and it's signed off on, and what that means is, okay, now I've delivered the thing that my editor wanted, and now we move into copy edits. I've never had a problem with the transition of, okay, this is mine, now this is theirs. I'm able to move pretty happily into copy edits and recognize that it becomes a product at some point, right? It becomes a product. And I do think I have a past in marketing, I have a past in PR. I think all of that has helped a lot. Where I've had to work is to block all that out while I'm writing the first drafts.
Oh,
you know,
right.
That's where it gets hard, because for instance, like I'm more aware of market trends than others might be. So whatever project I'm working on, I kind of have a sense of whether or not this is something that's selling or not selling at the moment. Or, you know, I know when I was working on my last book, Costa Alegre, I had in my head the knowledge that the historical fiction market can be tough to break into. And so I have to block out those market insights, not think about them at all. It's like an out-of-body experience. Protect myself from that knowledge so I don't get in my own way with these questions or perfectionism, I guess, and pretend, you know, to write like no one's waiting on my writing. like I don't actually have to deliver anything to anyone and protect sort of my magic. And then once I get it right, which by the way is not right away, it's many, many, many drafts, then I am awfully good about just saying, okay, now it's a product. But a lot of people struggle with that. A lot of people just, there has not been a book or a online teaching method or anything before to prepare people for what it feels like when you've been working on something so intensely private that in many cases no one's seen but you. And then all of a sudden it's becoming this book that some stranger can go on Amazon and leave you one star because they don't like the turtleneck that you're wearing in your author photo.
To ask you about that. I made a specific note about that. Is that something that really has happened?
Oh, it happens to people all the time. I don't actually read my Amazon reviews. Mm-hmm. I don't read any. I only read reviews that are in the media, let's call it.
Sure.
Right. But my husband very much likes to read my reviews. So he has said in the past, like, oh, someone left you one star because the title was too, like, I'm having so much fun here without you, my first book. Some angry man just thought that title was too long.
Oh.
And I've have friends who say that people leave them one star reviews because their name is too difficult to pronounce. Or they don't like the cover, or they didn't like the epigraph, or, you know, and so they discard all the rest of the content, forgetting that some real person out there has put years and years and years of their life into this book, and that a publisher has put some years and money into this book. So of course that happens. That happens all the time. People don't like the font in your book and they leave one stars. And of course there's trolls out there who make it their business. He's been kicked off, but there used to be this troll poet, mm-hmm, who would leave sort of notable authors one star the day on their pub day. He didn't read any of the books, but he would write these epic length poems denigrating their. I got one and I was actually kind of excited because it seems like a point of pride, like only big deal authors. And that one, I read, my husband directed me to it, and I sort of cherished it. You know, it was like, it was great. So, but I mean, I'm making light of this, but honestly, it can be incredibly jarring. And I tell people all the time, you know, especially new authors, don't read your reviews, because I mean, you can have someone, my husband will do it for you, like read the reviews.
He'll do it for everybody. Diego has a new job, right, reading everyone's reviews.
He'll send you the good ones. But like, I promise you, you can read five reviews that are just beautiful, generous, kind, well thought out. And it's the one review that says something so superficial that you just won't be able to get out of your system. And the next time you go to the page and you're trying to write something new and not think about expectations, that little troll voice is going to be there saying something like, you use too many adjectives, or whatever it is. It's really, really hard. I mean, it's a privilege publishing, but it's a brutal, brutal process going from sort of hermit status, thinking in your head, having conversations with yourself, writing alone. And what's the end game? The end game is that you're supposed to go promote all this stuff in front of hundreds of people and everyone's reading it. And all of a sudden you're able to talk about yourself and your writing in a polished way and pretend that you haven't spent the last 3 years of your life in like your pajamas, you know?
Yeah. Definitely. You've mentioned a number of times as we've been speaking, talking to friends or public friends in publishing, other friend writers, is having a community of writers important?
It's essential. I mean, I think that it's a survival mechanism, 100%. Now, I live in a rural area, and I don't have an MFA. So for me, I had to work really, really hard to build a literary community. But thank goodness I did. I mean, you can't get very far, because at the end of the day, like most industries, this is one that's very heavily based on relationships. You know, I'll never forget when my first book came, well, it was about to come out, and my editor had said to me, okay, well, talk to me a little bit about like the blurbs, right? Do you have friends we can ask? Are you friends with authors? And at that point, I didn't have anyone to ask. I actually said, you know, my high school writing teacher has remained like a steadfast supporter. Maybe we could get something from him. And God bless her, she didn't laugh in my face. But the support network thing is twofold. You will need to lean on people for favors. So be nice to people, be someone that they want to help. But more importantly, you're going to be emotionally raw through a lot of this. And at the very beginning too, people who are trying to get work published and trying to find an agent, that the submission process is really rough. It's exciting, but it's very hard, and there's a long wait period in between these submissions, and you do need someone's hopefully to vent with. It gets trickier over time, and this is another reason that I wrote the book. The thing is, once you start having some publishing success, especially if you have a book out, the amount of people that you can sort of vent to starts to shrink. Mm-hmm. In front of your eyes, because it's such a privilege to have a book out there, and it's such a privilege to have a publisher supporting your book, that you don't want to be the, you know, nobody goes on Twitter and starts complaining about their fears, their doubts, something that their publisher screwed up, right? God, I can think of one person who did that. I think the author Islet Waldman started complaining, and that poor woman, you know, her career was like taken down, you know, she was canceled, right, in quotes, for a little while, you know, and it's very rough. Like, this has happened to me before, where I would have these heart-to-heart conversations with a friend about, we didn't feel that our books were getting enough notice or something, and then literally 2 days later, I'd go on Instagram and see that very friend had just sold rights to, you know, film rights or something. So there's all these moving targets within your friendship circles that make it almost unsafe to talk to your own friends, because at any moment their books could be chosen for a celebrity book club, or I don't know, something magical could happen. And of course you're happy for them, but you want it for yourself. So it's rough. Like, what the publishing process can do to your own relationships is hard. That honestly is one of the reasons I wrote this book, so that people don't have to feel squeamish about competition with friends. They can just read anecdotes from people who are admitting that they've felt competition before, you know?
Mm-hmm. Our guest is Courtney Maum. Her book is Before and After the Book Deal. It's published by Catapult. At the end of the book, you have a section, Readying the Gangplank, Publishing Professionals and Authors Share Their Best Advice for Debut Authors. And was there any advice from this section that you particularly liked? Are you able to take advice from your own book moving forward from the people you connected with while you were creating it?
Oh, goodness, yes. I, you know, I was doing like copy edits for this book while Costa Alegre, my third novel, was about to sort of come out. And it's an exciting period before a book comes out, but it's also nerve-wracking. You're either having reviews or media hits, or you're not. And I was doing the copy edits for this book, and I was finding that I myself was being soothed by this book and by other people's anecdotes. In terms of specific advice toward the end of the book, you know, Otessa Mosfeg said not to drink. And I actually think that's good advice for people who do drink and they're on tour doing promotion, because you never know, you know, you wake up in the morning and you have to do like, sometimes there's an interview waiting for you. And I think it helps manage your emotions if you're sort of sober, available. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I loved the advice that Elizabeth Crane gave. She's an author, where she's just like, things change and they change again. You know, she said something like, I've had 5 books out and every single one has been received differently. Sometimes they're a success, sometimes they're not noticed. So things change and then they change again. I found that incredibly soothing, that there's so much pressure on the debut, and there's so much pressure on a book's, you know, first week out or the 2 weeks out. But I do think that the end goal, or now I've come to see the end goal as being the greatest success you can have is achieving time and space to continue writing. You know, so your first book, not everyone reads it. Its sales are sort of lackluster, but you have some good review. You know, it's a fine debut. Well, that's a success. You know, you could keep writing. So to not put this pressure on ourselves that every book has to be the thing that gets all the things, it's read by all the people, that's a huge success, and just aim for the long game of being able to continue to publish. I think that that's really healthy advice.
You also run a residency called The Cabins. Are you doing that again this year?
I am. It's going to be June 18th to June 22nd, and it's an interdisciplinary retreat, not a retreat in the sense where you go, you know, to work on your great American novel. We actually go, people come to learn from each other. Everyone who comes teaches a class in their own discipline. We have artists, dancers, musicians. We've had a clown. Mm-hmm. So it ends up being like adult summer camp. And applications are open till March 15th. It's June 18th to the 22nd. We have scholarships, and the website is thecabinsretreat.com.
You've also recently launched a newsletter, I think, to kind of continue the world building of before and after the book deal, writerly advice type thing. Tell me about the newsletter.
Yeah, the newsletter, it's currently called Momologue. I might be renaming it, but I do two things. I include publishing tips, writing advice, inspirational quotes and whatnot. And then every month I feature a different publishing professional and we talk about a certain theme. So January will be perfectionism.
Before and after the book deal, A Writer's Guide to Finishing, Publishing, Promoting, and Surviving Your First Book by Courtney Mom is published by Catapult. Courtney will be at Oblong Books and Music in Rhinebeck, New York this Thursday at 6 p.m. To learn more about Courtney, her newsletter, her artistic residency, and more, visit CourtneyMom.com. That link will be posted along with this interview at WAMC.org/roundtable. Courtney, congratulations on the book, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.